Let us have a look quickly on page 32, where we deal with the area of irregular expenditure. And I'm now on page 4 of this media release, but we are articulating the detail pertaining to that irregular expenditure on page 32. The page that's headed Unauthorized, Irregular, Fruitless, and Wasteful Expenditure. You will note in our report wasteful expenditure. You will note in our report that we say, look at that growth, so that we don't say we've now had an additional 12 billion in 1 year. The additional expenditure for irregular expenditure is about 4.5, because some of it is expenditure incurred in previous years, only identified and reported on in 2016, 2017. What does it mean? It means that the efforts that are being put into the system by municipal managers and CFOs are increasing the level of detection of irregular expenditure, because in some instances they don't go through the whole exercise in identifying this expenditure, but pick it up in years subsequent to when the money was spent. So that is what accounts for that extent and level of irregular expenditure. And I think if you want to see how we unpack all of this irregular expenditure in detail, as well as some of the instances to which it relates, as well as some of the provinces that were affected by this irregular expenditure, you will see we've basically identified the top 10 contributors to this irregular expenditure, whether or not it was incurred in 2016, 2017, but we have taken the full quantum of the amount. You will see on page 34, but we have taken the full quantum of the amount. You will see on page 34 of the report that the Eastern Cape leads the pack with regards to the total extent of irregular expenditure incurred by municipalities in that province. It accounts for about 13.5 billion of the total, followed by the Northwest, then Gauteng, and so it goes with the rest of the other provinces. And if you look at also the same irregular expenditure, if you look at which municipalities were the main contributors, regardless of which province they came from, is what is set out on page 8. Regardless of which province they came from, is what is set out on page 8. And the amount that has been addressed to date is just about a fraction, if you think about what 1 million represents in relation to 30 or 43 billion in total. I think also one of the things that we point out to on page 6 of the media release is also drawing attention to an increasingly difficult environment that the auditors are finding in respect of audits that we do. I'm sure the media will remember towards the end of last year we did highlight our frustration in respect of this particular matter. And in the latest period, we've had many staff members citing instances where they were confronted by intimidatory and hostile environments, especially where they were shining the light in certain instances on areas that were not looked at before. So we believe that there is a scope for anybody who has a challenge with what the auditors are reporting. However, we only accept it if there are sufficient grounds for the contestation. In this instance, we just want to highlight the fact that that matter has not gone away. We still are finding our auditors being put under sometimes unnecessary pressure without due consideration to the fact that auditors are supposed to do this work independently. On page 41 of the general report, and looking at page seven, where we speak about the financial health of municipalities, we are saying here the inability to collect debt from municipality consumers was widespread among a number of the municipalities. And I think it's a reflection of the sentiments that we have picked up both in the most recent budget votes, as well as of yesterday when the minister spoke to some of the challenges in financial management in local government. And I think it is inevitable that these municipalities, for as long as they are not able to collect the debt owing to them, will find it difficult to balance their books. In total, about 31% of the municipalities disclosed the deficit, meaning that the expenditures that they had incurred. I'm looking at page 41 now with all the movements that we are referring to here, where we say about 31% of the municipalities disclosed the deficit. These are instances where the revenue that they were able to generate overall suddenly got exceeded by the expenditures that were associated with the revenue that was generated. This puts a strain on their ability to continue to spend on the things that they need to spend on for as long as the revenues they ought to generate slip away from them. We also highlight the fact under the financial health of municipalities that the financial woes of local government also weighed heavily on municipal creditors. The impact of this inability to pay creditors was most evident in the huge sums owed for the provision of electricity and water to Eskom and the water boards, respectively. I think there was a significant exposure of this matter when Eskom and the respective people from SALGA, as well as National Treasury, were speaking about this matter in respect of monies going to water boards and Eskom. The financial statements that we have signed bear evidence to the significant amounts over periods of time that have not been paid to these primary suppliers, especially that they are at the coalface of the things that most of these municipalities deliver, which is water and electricity. We've set these out clearly in the financial statements, and I think for an appreciation by municipality of how this plays itself out, I would refer you to look at the respective financial statements to scrutinize exactly which municipalities owe which of these utility companies how much over what period of time. Another point that we are highlighting again in these audit outcomes, on page 41, we are drawing attention there at the top right hand to vulnerable financial position of municipalities, where we say about 31% of the municipalities, which represent about 73 of them, disclosed in their financial statements that they may not be able to continue operating. Although they have to continue operating, they were reporting that they were in a particular vulnerable financial position at the end of the financial year. That was June of 2017. Meaning that when they look at their finances and they analyze the financial commitments that they have, as well as those that they are still to make, they find that they are either not going to be able to have the necessary cash resources to continue to pay for the things that they ought to pay for. And that's why we want to draw attention to that issue, to say the list that was produced by Treasury or by COGTA in respect of the vulnerable municipalities is consistent with the same municipalities that we have examined from an audit point of view, which means that the level of vulnerability was not exaggerated. It is consistent with what we have also found, barring the fact that the numbers may not be the same, but we just cross-checked in a number of these provinces and we found that there is sufficient evidence to suggest that those vulnerable municipalities were also thrown out through the audit. I think it's important also to look at page 41 at the bottom in respect of the provincial overview, just to get an understanding of which among these provinces have got the significant majority of municipalities that are in this vulnerable position. You will see, for example, the Free State. This is now the provincial overview and the overall assessment of vulnerability. If you look at them just at the bottom of page 41 on the left-hand side, Free State leads the pack, followed by the Northwest, followed by the Northern Cape. These are the three provinces that have the majority of municipalities who have demonstrated a significant level of vulnerability. For example, if you just pay attention to the Free State box there, where we say overall assessment of vulnerability in the Free State, where there were good indicators found there was no municipality in this province that we found to have good indicators of strong financial management and financial health. Neither did we find those that were of concern, meaning that they were either here or there. However, we found all 18 of them requiring intervention in order to stop the bleeding. As far as the Northwest, if you look at the next one, is about 59% of them. About 13 municipalities in that province are in a specific serious financial difficulty, and followed by the 56% of the Northern Cape. So if you look at all nine provinces in respect of the number of municipalities, you will find most of them in these three provinces. And I think if you cast your mind to the list that would have been drawn up by COGDA, you will find most of the municipalities in those three provinces. Let me quickly step down to page 38 and just look at quickly this area of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I think all I need to say insofar as this one is concerned, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it is basically expenditure incurred where real opportunity not to incur it was not taken advantage of. This is where we pay interest unnecessarily, we pay penalties unnecessarily, because we do not assign people to make sure that whatever obligations we have are met and carried out on due dates. As we know, in major contracts, if you don't do it, you then pay something. Now, that is expenditure incurred in vain because you've got nothing for it. All you do, you pay because you didn't pay attention to the fact that you must submit a VAT return or you must pay a particular creditor because there are terms. If people bring their equipment on site to come and do a road or water infrastructure, every day they wait for a decision to be made, they normally impose penalties for those kind of things. So that is really what we are looking at. And you can see the numbers are not big, but if this is left unattended, it is potentially about 1.5 billion of expenditure that could have been used for various other activities. Some of you asked on page 42 to page 44 of this general report, we there speak about the shortcomings in the development and maintenance of infrastructure. What we do every year, we pick up different areas of infrastructure management and infrastructure expenditure as managed by the different municipalities and test it in respect of compliance with very many prescripts that come with it. You will know that some of them come via conditional grants as well as other grants that are there, the likes of your municipal infrastructure grant, public transport network grant, as well as the urban settlement development grant. These are the grants that we have examined through this audit as well as what has been reported on in this general report. The information pertaining to our assessment of all of these grants right down to the provision of road infrastructure on page 42, as well as the provision of water and sanitation, and lastly, the maintenance of water infrastructure, as well as the extent of water losses as articulated in page 44 of the release. So there's sufficient information that we have shared here just to give a sense of what our assessment of the findings has been in a number of these areas. Some of them, for example, the findings that we have made, especially if you look on page 42, targets not being achieved in respect of what has been committed, reported achievements not reliable, as well as supply chain management findings associated with the delivery of infrastructure and its maintenance in a number of these municipalities. As far as the road infrastructure is concerned, we also highlight also through each of the provinces as to which provinces had major findings in respect of this, because once most of these project management disciplines are not in place, that's when we start seeing the escalating levels of fruitless and wasteful expenditure in a number of them. So that will be the detail with regards to each of our assessment of the project area. I'd like to perhaps look at page 10 now of this media release and say that as we are going through this report, alongside we are also dealing with the Committee on the Auditor General, and I'm sure the Chair will take the floor later, where we had in 2016 agreed with the committee that there's going to be a process initiated in Parliament. And really, I think this particular amendment of the Public Audit Act is largely about addressing consequences, among other things, through an audit legislative instrument. That's effectively what that is about. And you are saying that when we raise the issue of consequences not being there, most people were asking us, so what are you going to do about it? And what I'm reporting now is that the process that will give rise to that capability for the audit office is nearing completion, having been commenced in 2017, and we hope through it, it will be another instrument that had not been in place that will assist in reinforcing many other initiatives that are taking place either in COGTA or in SALGA or in the National Treasury. But just for interest's sake, we've also highlighted in the yellow block under that paragraph instances that already exist where we are not able to activate this power to refer these for investigation. What could have been had this particular power been in place already? An example, for example, among others, is that in one particular audit where we identified certain issues pertaining to financial reporting as well as the employment of a consultant, there was no service level agreement, there were no regular contract extensions, and excessive rates paid, and a lack of monitoring of the work performed by the consultant. Despite the AG reporting on the to the board that this contract was potentially fraudulent, the board did not take any action to investigate the matters raised. Now, the reason you are using this example, you are saying if a particular authorized body does not take the required action to deal with some of the matters that are findings in the audit, this particular power will enable the audit office then to step in and do it themselves so that we can get to the bottom of exactly who and how much and what consequence will attach to that particular situation. Now that's the bulk of the stuff I wanted to share in respect of what is in these audit outcomes, and maybe I will quickly move to page 13 and just draw attention to some highlights of each of the provinces. If you look at what is on page 52 to page 78 of the general report, we are giving an insight and an assessment of our overall conclusions in respect of each of the provinces. And the media release touches in more summary level. However, the general report, starting on page 52 with the Eastern Cape and ending up on page 78 with the Western Cape, is a detailed breakdown down to each province where we have highlighted a couple of issues in respect of these audit outcomes. We decided that to make comparisons with these provinces in some of these is quite a difficult exercise, because you have a province that has got a majority of clean audits, while alongside you also have a province that has got unqualified audits with findings in certain areas. And we just thought that it would be good if you look at the statistics as we have set out in the media release, just to assess for yourselves the kind of issues that we are picking up. Just while you are on page 13, if one looks at the Eastern Cape, for example, here in the Eastern Cape, we are giving a summary of opportunities that were lost in respect of the commitments that they had made over a period of time. While they had about 20% of clean audits in 2015-2016, that has now gone down to the 5% that you see there. The quality of financial statements across this province, if one looks at all of the municipalities here, is about 62%. And as I said earlier on, its irregular expenditure, which was about 5.4 billion in 2015-16, has shot up to an irregular expenditure amount of 13.5. And that is the kind of summary that you will find with respect to the rest of the other eight provinces as we look at how they have performed and how their own individual municipalities have performed. And lastly, perhaps as we finish this feedback on this general report, I think it is worth noting that at the back of this report, from page 80 onwards, to make it easy for those that are going to write and analyze the report from page 80 to page 88, those 8 pages, we really set out the key issues that are pertinent to understanding the audit outcomes, as well as understanding the different types of audit results that we reach as an audit office. We also give an insight into how the audit process works, what we audit and how we audit it, as well as the scope of the different areas that we focus on in an audit. A detailed explanation of the meaning attached to terms like irregular expenditure, the likes of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as well as what our understanding based on the legal instruments is of the likes of your conditional grants, how they should be handled, as well as the purpose for which these grants are audited. We've also given you an insight into exactly what we look for in the performance reports that are presented. We are not validating the fact or otherwise of the delivery of services because we are not trained to deal with that. We examine the data and the information that gets reported in the financial statements to check whether it is not likely to mislead the user of the financial statements. We also take a look at the human resource element to assess its effectiveness while going through the issue of the control effectiveness that we examine. And lastly, some of the issues that we also look at here is what is the role of each of the ones that are providing assurance. Right from the senior management on page 86, what are the senior managers expected to do in a particular municipality in order to deal with, prevent, or avert the growth of these levels of negative audit outcomes? Municipal managers and municipal entity chief executive officers, the mayors, the internal audit units, the audit committees, the coordinating and monitoring departments that are not in the day-to-day institution of local government, but have got a coordinating role, whether they are provincial or national institutions. And lastly, the municipal councils, the municipal public accounts committees, as well as the portfolio committees on local government. So that when you look at that section of this report, which deals with our assessment of the key instruments that are meant to deal with these audit outcomes, at least you can have a context of what are they expected to do, what did we find as lacking in their pursuit of these particular disciplines. So that is the overall audit report and the issues attached, as well as the context and the background to them. But I thought perhaps let me just deal lastly with what is on page 46 of the general report. And on page 46, we reporting on the issue that has been in the public domain over time in respect of the use of consulting services, where insofar as the financial reporting discipline is concerned, the amount is more or less the same as what was spent last year, but still high, as it sits at about just about 0.7 of a billion. Am I right? Yes. 0.7 of a billion in total. And these are costs that are incurred by municipalities overall towards the assistance and the services that they get from private sector institutions that assist them with their financial management disciplines. However, one also needs to draw attention to the fact that the money spent on the one side is one, but on the other side, there are also issues of our assessment of effectiveness, which is what is on page 46 on the right-hand side, where even if you go out and get the services of a consultant, if your ability to manage records as well as to manage the instruments through which you are going to report are not effective, then the consultant is not going to help. If the management of the project that leads to the generation of adequate and reliable financial statements is not strong, then the consultant is not going to work. Some of the consultants themselves did not deliver what was intended, and I guess we can examine the reasons for it. The lack of records and documents, among others, is that, and in some instances, the appointment of consultants becomes a knee-jerk reaction upon learning that you are headed towards a disaster in an audit, and then you wake up thinking that the solution is going to be to go and appoint and procure the services of a consultant, and then you end up with a lousy audit outcome afterwards, having spent that much money. That's what page 46 is about. It's an assessment that is not improving and has been at this level over a significant period of time. Let me leave the media release of these audit outcomes at that and say that we once again have noted a lack of movement over a period of time as we have assessed this thing over the 5-year period, but also taken a step at a year-on-year comparison of these audit outcomes, and we want to leave it at that in terms of the detail to share with you. Thank you very much.